Welcome to LifeBeat. I'm your host, Chris Gast, Right to Life Michigan's Director of Communication / Education. Joining us today is our Education / Events Coordinator, Emily Kroll. Welcome back, Emily.
Yeah, here we are again.
You're back again. This is great. We're in person. We're not wearing body hazmat suits, so that's good. Anything in these circumstances. Well, we're going to talk about a couple things. We have a segment titled China Stinks, which we'll get to. We're also going to talk about our dear friends, the Little Sisters of the Poor, and how much fighting they love to do. First, I thought we'd just give a brief update on the petition drive and the upcoming election. So as far as the petition drive goes, we're recording this on July 16, on a Friday. Thursday. Mm-hmm. Next week, Friday, I believe that's the 24th.
Yes.
We are going to know the final result of whether or not we collected enough valid signatures. So we need to have submitted 340,047 signatures from registered voters. We're absolutely sure that we have more than 340,047 registered voters who signed the petition. The question is, are there enough mistakes in terms of people who signed it twice, or people who wrote down the wrong township or whatnot.
Or the wrong date.
Or the wrong county or the wrong date. You know, are there enough mistakes to invalidate our petition drive? And that's what we're in the process of checking right now. Planned Parenthood is challenging our petition once again. And so again, this petition, if this is your first time listening to LifeBeat, we've been talking about this for a little bit, right?
It's become a saga. Yeah.
Yeah. The entire purpose of this petition drive is to ban dismemberment abortions, which is the most common late-term abortion procedure in the state. And so hopefully next Friday, we're going to have some closure as the state abort canvassers decides based on the report from what we can do. And then finally we can chart a path forward from there, either making sure that our legislature votes for that legislation, or if the State Board of Canvassers rejects our petition drive, then we're going to have to focus on the election and then come up with Plan B for banning dismemberment abortions. And so by the next time we have the next podcast, Emily, theoretically, there have been enough crazy twists and turns in this story, we'll be able to tell you about what that Plan B might look like. But we'll see. The August 4 primary election is coming up, and we're talking about it a little early, Emily, because if you have an absentee ballot, don't just sit on that.
Yeah, that's a good strategy, yeah, because anyone who has been dealing with mailing things in the recent months will know that we've been experiencing some serious delays with the postal system. When you have an absentee ballot, you don't want to send it in 2 days before the election anyway, because under normal circumstances, that wouldn't get there. But if it's looking like you're going to be filling that out closer to the day of the election, be wary of sending it into the county or your township, because it's not necessarily going to get there in time. We had a recent decision come down that if ballots aren't there by the end of the day of the primary election, they're not going to be counted. So if you are doing an absentee ballot, make sure that if it's within 2 weeks of the August 4th primary, just drive it in and drop it off, just to make sure that your vote gets there and that it counts.
Yeah, and a lot of people who've done absentee ballots for a lot of years already kind of know that. But like you mentioned, because of the pandemic and mail delays, which we've experienced here in the office, you know, go in and drop it off. If you can, go to your local clerk's office and hand deliver it. Then you know it got there and you're not relying on a third party to get your vote counted, which can be scary. The post office lost my initial voter registration, which is why It'll be a cold day in hell that I ever am not voting at the poll booth. So I will see you on August 4th. But for the rest of you, especially all the new people that requested absentee ballots, send it in right now. Turn off LifeBeat, fill out the ballot, send it in, and then you can listen to the rest of the show. And of course, vote pro-life, and you can find out who the pro-life candidates are by going to rtl.org and find a list of Right to Life Michigan PAC endorsed candidates. There's no major primary races that are going to affect everyone in the state, but there's a lot of local races where if the pro-life candidate doesn't win in the primary, the makeup of the district is such that whoever wins the primary is probably going to win in November. And so the primary election is your chance to really decide whether the candidates in the general election are going to be facing each other to be pro-life or not. And so if you neglect the primary election, a lot of times you are just neglecting the entire election. So vote, or else. Or as PDD used to say, vote or die.
Wow, that's a, I mean, in some circumstances, maybe.
That's right, we don't mess around here. So that's that. All right, on to some topics. So the Little Sisters of the Poor, I'm sure we must have talked about this on the podcast because they have been in court since forever. Probably since you were born, Emily, it seems like.
No, it really started with the Obama administration when they were in court more frequently.
It did. So just some background, the Little Sisters of the Poor are a group of Catholic nuns, and what they do is they take care of elderly poor people. Little Sisters of the Poor. That's pretty much self-explanatory. And they employ people in their work. They pay money so that people can have a living, so that they can do whatever they want as they achieve the Little Sisters' mission of keeping poor elderly people from starving or living on the street. I'm sure everyone can agree that, except for Margaret Sanger, that that is a noble mission. Right?
You would hope so.
Right, right. So the Obama administration, when they were crafting all these policies as a result of Obamacare, these are policies that are not part of the actual law. So your congressman never voted on this. This is just something that the Obama administration cooked up. But it was the HHS mandate, which said that every employer has to cover a certain list of contraceptive options for free. In other words, your employer is purchasing your contraceptives for you. And the list of these contraceptives includes certain forms that may cause an abortion. You think about kind of your emergency contraceptives, like the morning after pill or your IUDs. You know, the research on that is always kind of shifting and is not really sure, but those are the forms that tends to be more evidence that that may occur. And so people objected because if you are serving people and you believe that they might be doing something, they might be harming other people, you don't want to be forced to basically be the ones harming those people by purchasing it for them. And people are certainly capable of, with the money that they make, buying whatever they want. You know, is Rights Life of Michigan, Emily, discriminating against you because they don't purchase your dinner for you tonight?
No. No, they're not. I mean, it'd be nice if they would, just as a little treat on the side, but no, no discrimination there.
Well, we're buying. I'm buying lunch for you on Friday.
Oh.
Next Friday for a co-worker's
going-away
party. So we are providing you, but generally.
Yeah, generally.
Generally, you know, you get money from your co-worker so you can buy whatever you want. And so the objection against that was sustained for Hobby Lobby in a very famous case. And another other companies that sued, and the Supreme Court said, no, you can't force Hobby Lobby to pay for these forms of contraception that they believe may cause an abortion. And I think that should make sense to people. They didn't want to help do it. They pay their employees can do whatever they want with their salary. And the Supreme Court said, yep, they don't have to do it. But the Supreme Court only decided that for closely held corporations. So in other words, a corporation where like a family or a small group of people own it and their kind of viewpoint on an issue is really clear. They didn't do that for nonprofits or religious organizations like Little Sisters of the Poor. So the Little Sisters have had to go back to court 3 times now. The last time, the Supreme Court, I believe the decision was 9-0, said, you know, the Obama administration rules can't be applied to them. Come up with something else. So the Trump administration said, all right, we're not going to rescind the HHS mandate. We're going to force all these businesses to provide these forms of contraception unless they have a religious or moral objection, in which case, and the moral thing is important, Emily, I think, because I know a lot of pro-life people tend to be religious, but there are groups out there like secular pro-life, mm-hmm. there are atheists who are pro-life, and all sorts of people who are pro-life for and have all sorts of other views, but they may have that exact same objection that Hobby Lobby did. And so what the Trump administration said is, if you have a religious or a moral, a principled objection to that, you don't have to do it. So, I mean, it sounds like a fair agreement, and that's what the Supreme Court demanded happen, and the Trump administration took a while to get to it, but because of all the litigation mess that these poor nuns have had to deal with for years. Finally, last week, the Supreme Court said, no, stop it. Pennsylvania, in this case, it was actually the Attorney General of Pennsylvania. In our email, I said the Governor Tom Wolf, who's best buddies with the Attorney General, but really, it was the Attorney General, both of whom very pro-abortion in Pennsylvania, who was attacking the Little Sisters of the Poor. And, you know, the Supreme Court said, stop it. The Little Sisters are fine. They don't have to do this. The Trump administration's rule is fine. Right?
Pretty straightforward.
And most people shouldn't really be troubled by that or be surprised that nuns don't want to buy IUDs. I mean,
I
know this is on the radio. I don't know if this is a, you know, I don't know about what the FEC wants to say about it, but these are the issues we're facing on and the parent legal requirements. What troubles me about it most, Emily, was the argument that Pennsylvania was making, was that Obamacare, this was not part of the law. This is not a law. There's no law that says that the Little Sisters of the Poor have to do this. The Obama administration cooked up a requirement, I think, and I think most people who look at it would agree, as a way to punish the pro-lifers for opposing Obamacare. Because remember, that whole thing almost got sunk by Michigan Congressman Bart Stupak and a couple pro-life Democrats. And eventually just enough of them caved in the end after kind of a really fake promise. But that almost cost his signature issue. And so I think he was mad and saw an opportunity to get back. And that was really kind of the crux of the Supreme Court's position, was that, well, if you really wanted to provide people with contraceptives, there's a lot of ways you can do that without forcing other people to buy them. Like, you know, Title X, which the government spends tens of millions of dollars on, none of which are going to Planned Parenthood anymore, you know, where you provide low-cost, like, there is plenty of ways you can do this without violating the conscience of people. And under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, that was why the Supreme Court reached the decision that they did. But Pennsylvania's argument was the Obama administration could just do this, and the Trump administration can't undo it.
Even though it's not a law.
I mean, so whatever abortion supporters say is the law, because they say it, but then using the exact same legal authority, a pro-life administration can't undo it.
Is
there any logic there? Is there a scintilla of logic there?
No.
I mean, would you feel ridiculous making that argument? I mean, it violates the Administrative Procedures Act. They can't do this. It's stupid. It's dumb. And the very fact that Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Sonia Sotomayor would go along with it, I mean, it doesn't matter. For these abortion-supporting Supreme Court justices, as I know we talk about until we're blue in the face, nothing matters except making sure that their side wins. And I know in a legal, you know, in a legal debate, you try to make sometimes you make arguments that sound kind of ridiculous in an attempt to win because your goal is to win. But just the whole concept that President Obama's rules is a dictator for life, and his rules, you know, are no different than the Ten Commandments and are eternally sufficient unto themselves. But the Trump administration can't follow a Supreme Court ruling and fix it using the exact same legal... I'm done. You do the rest of the podcast. I'm done.
No, thank you. But it is, it's an interesting do as I say and not as I do. Or do as I do, but not as I say. It's so confusing, really, when you get into these edicts that come down from the executive branch that aren't passed into law, but they hold the weight of law. And it's encouraging that at least 7 of our Supreme Court justices this time decided to side in the right way and say that, you know, you can't force people to do something if it's against their beliefs, their religious beliefs, or their moral beliefs. So there's another win for the little sisters of the poor.
A final win?
I doubt it. I'm going to be pessimistic. The people seem to have picked them as a target. They're obviously not an easy target because they keep winning, but they look like they're a target.
Yeah, I'm guessing that Pennsylvania will find a new way to try to mess with them. The idea, the abortion supporters are bugged by the idea that there's someone somewhere who's not supporting abortion, who's not helping abortions happen. Just the very idea that someone out there believes an unborn child has value is a problem. And so that's how this case originally about supposed to be about contraceptives, which, you know, of course, Rights to Life Michigan doesn't take a position on true contraceptives, and nuns and healthcare and Supreme Court and a hobby store all came together in an ugly fight, and no doubt the fight in some form will continue. One could only imagine what a President Joe Biden, or rather all the people running President Joe, Sleepy Joe's administration, are going to cook up next time. No doubt with the same process. So that's their argument is, Obama did it. Oh, you can't do anything different than that. That's the law. And then Trump changes it. Oh, that's unconstitutional. So then President Biden is going to change that. Like, oh, this is totally legal now. Because it's not Trump. Orange man bad.
Mm-hmm.
That's their entire legal jurisprudence theory. Orange man bad. All right. Enough of that?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about another case that is perhaps more serious and somber and will maybe involve less joking and have some gallows humor when you work in the company of death every day. But we're talking about China and how they stink, which I'm sure most people can agree with. And in America, we have this reliance on China in so many ways, given they're such a large country and economy. And China is one of the leaders in the world also of human rights violations.
One of, I would say they're probably the leader, because not only do they violate human rights, they support all of the other countries that violate human rights and assist them with it a lot of the times, not very publicly. But I would put China at the top of the list.
So China's greatest export is injustice.
Yeah. Injustice and cheap children's toys.
Yeah. So why are we talking about this, in China in particular? Because not all those other human rights issues are really our issues, but abortion and infanticide and euthanasia certainly are. And you can combine all three of these issues in one when you look at, and amongst many other things, and how the Chinese are handling their Muslim Uyghur minority. So do you want to kind of describe the video that either is new or made the rounds newly today?
Well, there was a video going back and forth on Twitter today of, it was drone footage of a large group of Uyghurs in Xinjiang, if I'm pronouncing it right, the province. But basically, they were being corralled by Chinese party forces sitting on the ground in blindfolds and bound, waiting for trains to take them to the internment camps. So it really is, when you look at it, what China is doing with the Uyghurs is not really much different than what the Nazis did with the Jews or what the Soviets did with their political enemies. It's taking a group of people who can't defend themselves, rounding them up like cattle and shipping them off to be what they say re-educated. There, we know that there's some who are losing their lives, and it's really, it's disgusting what people will do to each other when they're given the power to do it.
And the reason for this seems to be twofold. First reason is slave labor, so modern day slavery. And the second reason is, of course, population control, because in the mind of the Chinese, this minority with strong religious beliefs, I believe most Uyghurs are Muslim, represents a threat to their power and authority. And besides rounding people up and just murdering them, they've have many other ways to do this population control, including forced abortions, infanticides, which China has no problem doing to their own people, as we've seen with the one child, now two child policy, that China only now is realizing from an economic and demographic standpoint what a dumb thing that was to do, to just butcher your next generation, and then try to expect a bright Chinese future. They would enforce it by kidnapping women, making them undergo forced abortions. There were examples of infanticide, children left to die so the parents would avoid crippling fines, particularly if the child was a girl, because if they could only have one child and their culture has a strong preference for a boy to carry on the family name, then that's that. It wasn't one child everywhere in the country. I believe in rural areas it was a little relaxed, and each province enforced it differently. It's two children now. They might continue to change as China continues to realize the demographic crunch it's in, but the basic point is they're willing to do that to their own people. They have no compunction about doing it to this minority that are using for slave labor. And so they've been herding these people up, and there have been reports that women are being forced to undergo forced abortions. It's hard to get information out of China. You know, like this drone footage is one way. Dissidents who speak out. As you can see how China's doing with Hong Kong now. If you're a dissident in China, you don't have exactly a long life expectancy or simply being free for very long. And it's not just what they're doing to the unborn and the recently born, what they're doing to the elderly. So kind of one report I've seen that got a lot of attention lately is human hair. So they're just shaving their heads and selling their human hair, but also organ trafficking. Not just Planned Parenthood's job. So they can, and China hasn't been doing this just to the Uyghur minority. They were doing this to practitioners of Falun Gong and imprisoning them and then murdering them for their organs, which then they can sell to people overseas, high bidders, you know, so they can cut on the organ donor list. And they are presumably doing this to the Uyghurs as well. I've heard a few reports on that. It's hard to get good information, but and when you consider that China has what? 30 million, 40 million? How many abortions a year do they do? Oh, I haven't looked at that. I should have looked up to that number before we go, but
it's up there. Well, their population is what, close to 1.8 billion?
It's up there, yeah.
Yeah, that number would follow.
Yeah, so China is the, I guess they can say, well, we're not North Korea, but we're not that different. That's like saying, we're not that serial killer who killed 100 people. We only killed 20 people. That's no real accomplishment. So what do we do about China?
We hold our elected officials accountable for what's happening. We need to work on how our country relates to China, what we can do. I know the Trump administration has been submitting lists of Chinese individuals involved in the human rights violations against the Uyghurs. They've been submitting those to Congress to get sanctions against them. China actually recently put sanctions against several, two senators and one representative here in the United States for pushing against what China is doing. So I believe Ted Cruz said it was one of his proudest badge of honor was that he has been banned from China. So I guess that's one thing to be proud of. But we need to be educated. We need to talk to our friends, we need to talk to our family, we need to talk to our neighbors, and really understand that with the path of abortion, euthanasia, assisted suicide, you're always denying one person rights. And China is a good example of what can happen when the powers that be decide that one group of people doesn't deserve those rights. In Iceland, we've seen it where children that have Down syndrome detected in the womb are exterminated. So they claim that they have no real cases of Down syndrome, but that's not actually true. They've just been aborting all of the children that they detect with Down syndrome. So it's dangerous. Human rights and the right to life isn't something that can be granted. It's not something that's given by the people in power. It's not given by your neighbors. It's inherently there because we are human beings. And it doesn't matter if it's a human being in China. It doesn't matter if it's a human being in Michigan. It doesn't matter if it's a human being in South Africa. People deserve to live. And that's what we're fighting for every single day. And we need to be encouraged that we have people around us that engage in that battle with us, but we also need to stand up for life and be the people who are willing to speak for those who can't speak for themselves.
Anna, just to close this out here, I think this is a great opportunity that most people can recognize how bad what China's doing. I think this is a great example for all you pro-lifers out there who maybe have friends who kind of are really uncomfortable with abortion but can't quite bring themselves to oppose it, to hold out as an example of, you know, do you see how this is really a tool of oppression? Abortion is sold as a tool of women's liberation. When Gretchen Whitmer says abortion is life-sustaining, she's talking about the mom and how much better her life is going to be. But, you know, China thinks their whole country is going to be better off, and the whole world is better off if, you know, Uyghurs are being murdered for their organs while they make, you know, cheap consumer goods for the rest of us. And are we okay with them doing that? And we're getting the benefits of it. And so I think it's a great opportunity for pro-life people to kind of get kind of the people on the fence engaged and kind of see that how abortion just fits into this very anti-human agenda. That's all the time we have for this edition of Life Beat. Join us again in 2 weeks, and we'll have a final update on the signature portion of the petition drive.